on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, and I might have already said this, so I'm repeating myself. Spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour, from a September 3rd book launch and reading event held at Novel Idea Bookstore and emceed by Rena Ubitus, you'll hear four poets with connection to Wintergreen Studios, which is an environmental retreat center. All four poets had taken part at various times in an annual writing workshop retreat there facilitated by poet Lorna Crozier. The poets you'll hear today and that evening were and are Liz Huntley Yentz, Susan Wismer, Callista Markatich, and Sheila Stewart. This a little bit over 80-minute event will last, obviously, because it's 80 minutes, well into the second hour, but I'm just letting you know that it will air uninterrupted. And in the second hour then, following the remainder of that book launch and reading event, I'm going to have a little time today, so I'm going not enough time to share another segment, so I like to share a little bit of music when I can, so I will do that. In fact, some music immediately after the reading or the airing of that launch event. And also, I have a bit of local information, calls for submissions and event notices, and I'll share some of that. And then a final song to take us out of here. Just the top of each hour thing I always mention at the start of each hour is that occasionally some poetry, music, or spoken word on this show may contain strong language. I try to preserve that as much as possible to honor the integrity of the work and the author. I'm really struggling with words today, so I'm glad I've got a long segment on here so you don't have to put up with it and listen to me. Something I usually announce at the end of each hour, but won't be able to if I don't interrupt this, is that I'll just remind you here, and then I will again at the end of the show, and maybe even after the segment finishes in the second hour, is that I do upload both hours of this show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. I usually get that done shortly after I get home, so try to get it done by 7 or 7:30. And I'll tell you what, let's go ahead again with that book launch reading and event. And I'm doing this over again, just in case some of you happen to tune in just a few seconds late and didn't catch it right at the top of the hour. But what you're going to be hearing in this hour, and for most of the second hour, actually, or a good portion of it, is from a September 3rd book launch and reading event that was held at Novel Idea Bookstore. It was emceed by Rena Ubitus. You're going to hear four poets with connection to Wintergreen Studios, which is an environmental retreat center about an hour, I think, north of Kingston. And all four poets had taken part in various times with an annual writing workshop retreat facilitated there by Lorna Crozier. The poets you'll hear are Liz Huntley Yentz, Susan Wismer, Callista Markatich, and Sheila Stewart. And again, as mentioned also at the very top of the hour, this event will run uninterrupted to about nearly halfway through the second hour. Let's go ahead and just do it. How's that? I hope you enjoy it. It was a great launch event.
Just kidding. Wow. Good evening, everyone. My name is Rina Upadis, and I'll be moderating tonight's readings by four wildly talented poets. We have the privilege of gathering here on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, and Huron-Wendat nations. I am grateful to have this space to share poetry and fellowship, pursuits that resonate deeply with traditional cultures around the globe. Mary Oliver reminds us that poetry and storytelling are among the most ancient of art forms, and that their roots are within the original wilderness of the earth. We are also grateful for the many ways that Oscar and Novel Idea support poets with events like these. Kingston is incredibly blessed with a community that celebrates its local writers. Some of you may notice that some of the local writers drove quite a way to get here tonight. Rita Dove, the first African-American poet laureate, said that poetry is language at its most distilled and most powerful. You will hear words this evening from four powerful poets. Each of these poets has a connection to Wintergreen Studios, an environmental retreat center little less than an hour from here, of which I am one of the founding directors. An annual event at Wintergreen is a week-long poetry workshop taught by the exceptional poet and even more exceptional teacher, Lorna Crozier. Each of the poets you will hear from this evening has attended one or more of Lorna's workshops over the years, but I don't think the four of them have ever attended at the same time. So one of the legacies of Lorna's workshops is a Monday night Zoom group. Poets who are connected through Lorna and through Wintergreen meet weekly to share their work and their live stories. How lucky we are to have four of them here with us this evening, and five or six I see in the audience. And what an interesting way you will soon hear that they have chosen to represent this interweaving of people and ideas and words. Liz Huntley is the 2025 inaugural recipient of the Stephen Hyten Fellowship.
Yay!
Some of her Wintergreen work is represented in the Book of Night chapbook, where Lorna's introduction is titled, Poetry is Like Bread. She writes, always a good place to start a book of poetry is with the wisdom of the Chilean poet Pablo Neruda, who said, on our earth, before writing, before the printing press was invented, poetry flourished. That is why we know that poetry is like bread. It should be shared by all, by scholars and peasants, by all our vast, incredible, extraordinary family of humanity. Lorna's selection of this quotation was, in part, a nod to Liz Huntley, who is a baker by trade, and who baked for us all during the workshop. Liz is also a mother, a farmer, a yoga teacher, an artist, and a poet. From the start, she distinguished herself at Wintergreen as a boundary-defying thinker. Her work challenges writing conventions in exciting and surprising ways. She is articulate. She is funny. She is brave. Her recent pieces, which explore truths about motherhood, touch on the raw realities of parenting that many of us experience but hesitate to voice. I expect we will hear some of those this evening. Susan Wismer will join Liz and then follow Liz, I'm told, in this evening's readings. I can't remember a time when Susan wasn't at Wintergreen. The very first chapbook collection, titled Mama's Prayer Flags, was the title of the poem that Susan contributed to that collection. I reread it when I was preparing these remarks, and I was struck newly by the final two stanzas. Here they are. May I be worthy. May I be worthy enough to write about how I loved to help Mama hang out the laundry and to watch the bright colors blow dry in the wind. You will, I am sure, find Susan more than worthy. After Susan reads from her recent work, Sheila Stewart will be next. Sheila joined us in 2021 during the Pandemic Poetry Workshop. As Lorna observed in the introduction to the chapbook, Pink Flamingos, inspired by one of Sheila's poems, for us, this was the first time in 2 years that we'd sat around a table sharing food and stories with a group of people who were not part of our immediate family. We came together for a week because we wanted to be blessed by poetry, to listen to it, to roll around it like a horse in wet grass, to taste its salt on our tongues, to meet it as it meets us in the wildness of our own unknowing. Here, we wanted to learn again that community and words matter. Words matter, community matters, family matters, as Sheila so astutely demonstrates in her recent collection, If I Write About My Father, which she will be reading from tonight. But what of that Pink Flamingo title, you may be wondering, I hope? Truly, the title of Sheila's poem remains one of my favorite of all time. It is. The Pink Flamingo salt and pepper shakers will be misplaced before the end of the world. Followed by a tight and poignant poem, a style you will hear in Sheila's work this evening. And the final member of the quartet, Calista Markotich. Callie and I met over 40 years ago, long before Lorna's workshops at Wintergreen, when I was looking to put together a writing group, and a fellow friend and writer, Linda Wild, suggested that Callie might be interested. She was. We met for many years. I was the one who usually didn't show up, irregularly, but always with gusto and good food. We stayed connected through poetry, as well as art making of all kinds, adventures including wilderness escapades in the darkness of winter, and pinhole photography and furniture making. Then there was a dark period in Callie's life that coincided with one of Lorna's early poetry workshops, and I knew it in my bones that Callie should be there. She came, and came again and again, and began a new career as a celebrated poet. Lorna describes her writing as sure and elegant, as Callie is herself. And so we begin. We will hear first from Liz, followed by Susan, Sheila, and ending with Callie. Even though I'm sure you'll be tempted, could I ask you please to hold applause until each poet has finished her reading or transition to the next poet or something. I know this is going to be weird. And we will then have time to open the floor to comments and questions before rounding out the evening together, perhaps with a stroll around Novel Idea for some bedtime reading to take home. Books of poetry by these authors will also be available. Susan Wismer's recent Hag Dances, Callie Markotich's Wrap in a Big White Towel, and Sheila Stewart's If I Write About My Father. I'm sure they'd be happy to sign your personal copies. Perceptive listeners may have noticed that I didn't list a book by Liz Huntley. That is a treasure to come, an outcome of the Stephen Hyten Fellowship, and a tribute, I am sure, to Stephen's life and legacy as a writer and musician and remarkable human being. I expect that everyone in attendance will know something of Stephen's profound impact in Kingston and in Prince Edward County, where these four poets will be reading again tomorrow evening. In the description of the fellowship that Liz is the first to hold, Stephen is described as an artistic polymath. The fellowship supports artists who challenge genre, medium, and mode. We are about to hear what that challenge sounds like. Please join me in welcoming Liz Huntley.
Thank you. Great. I will hop right to it. So stereotypes are a funny thing. My husband is German. I will say first, my husband is my favorite adult in the world. And he has many redeeming qualities. But he's not a very good German. He's not particularly punctual or organized, I would say. But sauerkraut, in our household, sauerkraut is an essential ingredient, and we must always have enough sauerkraut on hand to last us through the apocalypse. So this is a poem about sauerkraut, and it's called Sauerkraut. Fossicking amongst the brassicas, we search for emerald cabbage moth caterpillars and find them snuggled along the ridged veins of glossy kohlrabi fronds, in the brainy contours of cauliflower and the puckered lips of kale. The caterpillars squelch sickly when pinched between the fingers, thus leaving the garden flush with verdant green, bursting with marigold, blushing radishes, and birdsong. Soon the cabbages are ready to harvest, pale ripe moons, each with its own gravitational tug. We slice them thinly and pack them in an earthenware pot. Within days, the sauerkraut, submerged now in brackish water, begins to chatter. We descend to the cellar to listen to it blurp and burble. Blurp, we parrot back. Like all things alive, Lactobacillus thrives when spoken to. By fall, the basement shelves are lined with gems of seasoned rotkohl, sauerkraut jams, all manner of pickle and preserve, each luminescent jar a lodestar to guide us through winter. On the darkest nights, we pile our plates with sauerkraut soaked in white wine and juniper berries, bratwurst and ham hock, boiled potatoes with butter and bitter parsley. It is not the cabbage so much as the taste of our ancestors in our mouths that leaves us verklempt. These forebears sing to us, rag and bone the color of garlic, scattered across the Vaterland, from unmarked graves in Bergen-Belsen, from any wormy soil where food or grief may grow, they call to us. We pile our plates with the age-old song of love and loss and salt. Mm. I'm thinking of this as like a flora and fauna poetry set. So this next one has something of a provocative title, so just keep in mind it's a poem about vegetables. Filthy sex. When I say talk dirty to me, I mean grow me a carrot with your bare hands. I say filthy sex, I mean the she-goat in rut, her swollen belly, the sweet foam of milk. You little slut. 18 hens in the coop, one rooster among them. I mean, give me this speckled egg, hard-boiled on a plate, a pinch of fleur-de-sel, phallus of asparagus. I say, appleseed, pith, fingerling, flesh, honey from the comb, your tongue, the furred body of a bee. The way to my heart is lick the bowl clean. I mean this marriage of our fingers rooting in the damp soil. Mm. So some pieces on fauna. This next piece is a piece that is actually part of the project that I am working on at the El Perdi A-Frame right now. And the project is pieces about motherhood, which take different forms of writing. So this one is a dictionary. It's called An Incomplete Dictionary of Accuracies and Inventions. And there is one word per letter of the alphabet. We do not have time to hear them all, nor do you want to, so I'm just going to give you a small selection of some of these dictionary entries, starting with O, orifice, noun, one, the entrance or outlet of any anatomical structure. A, the nose, needing careful attention because in their efforts to make exploration of the world and everything in it, your children will be prone to shoving things up into their nasal cavity, and you may spend the better part of the day in ER having, say, a pussy willow extracted from it. B, the problem of the mouth being not so much what they put in, although that becomes quite expensive as they grow, but more so what comes out, the expulsion of verbiage, mostly in the form of incessant questions, is headache-inducing. C, the issue with the ears being mainly that the deep crevice behind the ear flap is the favorite hiding place of ticks and also never particularly clean. D, orifices of the nether regions will eventually become none of your concern, but first, there is many a diaper to be changed. Moving along to R, rabbit. Noun, one, A, any of a family Lepridae of long-eared, short-tailed, lagomorph mammals with long hind legs that can be pulled by a magician out of a hat. B, this is the kind of trick your children expect from you when you're on a barren road between nowhere and nowhere and they suddenly decide that they're hungry and demand you produce a snack from thin air. And finally, I will give you Z. Zoo. Noun. 1. A. An establishment which maintains a collection of wild animals, typically in a park or gardens, for study, conservation, or display to the public. B. A household which maintains a collection of feral offspring, to be displayed in public as infrequently as possible and much to the embarrassment of the parents. C. The eldest being most spider-like, the slightest golden fuzz visible on his spindly limbs, with an uncanny ability to scale the walls and powers of observation which suggest multiple sets of eyes. D. The middle child has a koala-like air about him, sweet and cuddly, but clingy really when it comes down to it, and a propensity to use you as a climbing gym. E. The youngest is definitively mountain goat, quick to identify and clamber up to the highest available vantage point, much to his own peril, and furthermore, like any goat worth his salt, resists being fenced in and achieves Houdini-like feats of escapism with any baby gate, playpen, or sliding glass door that stands in his way. F. In addition, stray cats, terrified amphibians, and all manner of insects, both dead and alive, are constantly being paraded into the house. 2. A situation characterized by confusion and disorder. A. A menagerie of progeny. B. A gaggle of gametes. C. A barrel of babies. D. A babble of bairns. E. A tangle of toddlers. F. A tittering of tots. G. A cauldron of kiddos. H. A litter of littles. I. A herd of hellions. J. A romp of rugrats. K. A wreckage of runts. L. A plague of prepubescents. M. A nuisance of nine-year-olds. N. A nonsense of newborns. O. A nutjob of niños. P. A mischief of maidens. Q. An insanity of infants. R. An apocalypse of adolescents. S. A murder of moppets. T. A wallop of whelps. U. A scourge of small ones. V. A flamboyance of fetuses. W. A bamboozle of bambinos. X. A seesaw of siblings. Y. A destruction of descendants. Z. A derangement of dependents. 3. From the Greek zoos, living, meaning of animals, of animal life. A. As in spermatozoon, of which the X spermatozoa are said to swim faster and the Y spermatozoa are said to live longer. It's a myth, but the fact remains that your boys have been outracing everybody since preconception. B. As in zookeeper. C. Mother. And the last piece I will read is something that I wrote, which is in kind of two voices. I'm going to call on Susan Wismer to help me out with this one. So one of the voices is my own words, and the other is stuff I found on the internet. I will read the my own voice, and Susan will be my Wikipedia voice. This is called A Selection of Fauna, Bound, Domesticated, Sexually Mature, with notes.
1. Bovine.
I was all fours.
Large bovid ungulates. Largely kept as
cloven
cattle. Borrowed from Anglo-Norman kettle. Originally meant movable personal property. A variant of chattel.
Not a bird. Not ruffed with plumage. I was wide, sway-backed and close to the ground.
An adult female that has had her first calf or second calf, depending on regional usage, is called a cow.
Blunt-horned, broad, square teeth, muscled hip, I was not without power.
Can be called a dam with reference to the breeding record.
Could be led by a rope. Sometimes I bucked at the halter to remind him of my strength. Afterwards, he might fondle my silken ears to show we were in agreement.
Often mentions of dams imply kept in the herd for repeated breeding.
Not like a bird, not vermilion, azure. You had to pay attention to see the flint in my eyes, gold-flecked flank, sheen on the septum ring.
A young female, before she has had a calf of her own, is called a heifer.
I had no high-pitched song, no claw. Where others beaked, I was rough-tongued, moist of snout.
Who has had only one calf is occasionally called a first-calf heifer.
I lay low in the field. Close to the wet earth I lay, lowing.
Heiferettes are either first-calf heifers or a subset thereof. There we go. Without potential to become... Let me do that again. Okay. Heiferettes are either first-calf heifers or a subset thereof, without potential to become lineage dams.
He heard me lowing slow, and he wanted me.
Two. Helistoma teminki.
Rose translucence, silvered thrashing.
Kissing gourami.
Caught hook, line, and...
The pectoral fins are large, rounded, and low-slung.
Gasping. Her mouth holds a certain shape. Oh.
It is important to emphasize the particularity that this species has in its mouth. An additional joint between its jaw and the rest of the joints known as...
Her mouth holds a bubble. Oh. Oh. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh.
The intramandibular joint, and I practice that too, divides the jaw into two independent elements, increases the degrees of freedom and potential.
Her mouth holds a bauble, pink gem of tongue.
Spawning begins by circling, which progresses to nudging and dancing and intense beating of tails.
Her mouth a Bible, I swear on it, mouthful of holy curses.
His body around the female, turning her upside down.
Her mouth a babble, his fleshy fingers at her throat.
Kissing fish can also refer to a catch and release fishing technique.
Before he plunges her.
Where the fish is kissed after being caught, before being released.
Back into the blue.
Giant silk moth.
What is flight? A lick of wind under the wing?
Actius luna, also called the American moon moth.
Not here. Here everything suspended, dust motes cradled in the still air.
Imagos, winged, sexually mature, often referred to as adult moths, emerge from their pupae. Abdomens are swollen, wings are small, soft, and wet, have vestigial mouth parts, and do not feed.
Sunlight stalking the windowsill, burnishing the wood grain on the frames.
In size and appearance, green wings, eye spots on both forewings and hindwings, and long, sometimes somewhat twisted tails extending.
Skin of eyes, paper tongue, tender frill.
Initial Latin name replaced when Carl Linnaeus described the species in 1758 in the 10th edition of Systema Naturae, derived from Luna, the Roman moon goddess.
Splayed and pinned. A prick through the heart.
Mating process, wherein the females at night release volatile sex pheromones.
Forever caught in the shape of ecstasy.
We can clap now.
I might just stay up here.
You are to stay up here.
Okay.
And could my other compatriots come up too. I'm in the spirit of community. I've asked them to help me with my first poem here. It's called Don't Know, and I don't know about you, but I'm finding many things going on in the world out there these days rather distressing, and this is a poem that came from that. And having a number of voices reading it, I think just works perfectly. We'll see. Don't know. Don't know why I leave my shoes at your door. Don't know how to stop, though you tell me, don't bother.
It's my mother's voice, louder, her ghostly embrace, stronger than all present moments.
Truth is, the house I was raised in, always a mess. But she taught me to love.
My own unshod foot, bare on wood floors.
Don't know why that stays with me when so much is gone.
Today, the pink poppies are paddywhacked bobbleheads. Tall silver-furred stalks heave in all that wild waving through wind and rain. Their thin pink petals hold on.
Must be hard, but they keep their heads.
They keep themselves together. Just can't help wishing my own soft body was that strong.
Don't know how to begin.
To stop seeing all that's gone wrong so far today.
If I turn off my cell phone, you can't call me. And I want you to know that I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm so honored and pleased to be here, and I won't go on about it. But many of the poems in this book had their birth at Wintergreen, so I've chosen a few of them to read tonight. And didn't the publisher do a great job with the cover?
Yeah.
Night vision. Underfoot, autumn dry leaves crumble, whisper. Under three stars, white bands of cloud, haloed moon. Down the path, the dark cabin waits. Tonight's air is uncommonly warm. I open the green painted door, light candles, rekindle the fire. We'll soon sleep. Meanwhile, tree hands reach naked through moon's falling light. Their prayers are constant, implacable, rising. True story from Wintergreen. And in 2022, my younger brother was extremely ill, and I spent the summer racing back and forth to Ottawa, spending time in intensive care, holding his hand, saying, "It's all right, you've lived a good life, you can go." Anyway, he's out kayaking this weekend. He's doing just great. However, when this poem was written, I didn't know that for sure. Forecast. The scent on this morning's wind is of rain. But I'll hang wet laundry out anyway, pinning up hope for good weather again. Not much else to say to you today. A black squirrel hops along the back fence. Big dog growls, barks, runs fast, knowing he hasn't got even the tiniest chance. Never comes close to catching a squirrel. But each day he'll try for the miraculous impossible, as will I. All pray to stop the unstoppable, pick out clothes in the wind while it rains, shout out, "Please don't die," and shout out again. Cliff edge. One hand firm on dark earth, flat grass. The other hand hangs, sends fingers to touch over the lip that they call hag. What remains? Sunrise, lichen, tree trunk, ghost of mountain, rounded cheekbones, traced contours, your face, my lips, our mouths, how they seek open seawater, dark metal salt for the tongue, volute, the shell of your ear, pearled, singing, from the shimmering edge of the world these last years. And one more, perhaps, if I find it. This is a very short poem, but may well be my personal favorite in the whole collection, so I wanted to share it with you. Simplicity. A vast tenderness lies here, beyond forgiveness. In this generous and frightening wilderness, I live embraced for this short time, my human body on this earth, a simple offering. And for my last poem today, I'm going to ask my two partners who are here. I'm queer. I live in a polycule. It's a new word for me. I just learned it. But before that, I said I had two partners. Now I say, I'm part of a polycule. Go home and look it up. It's a great word.
You should tell them where you learned it.
I learned it from our doctor. Lou went to see her, and she said goodbye to Lou by saying, say hello to your polycule. So Lou came home, and we all looked it up.
We saw that was part of your toe.
It's a perfect word. Perfect word for a queer set of relationships, which we are. Mm-hmm. Via 1, a love poem. What measures a life? Fox tracks circling red blood, white snow, tufts of fur, birches clustered together, companionable shelter, this train passing.
Settled in, you here beside me, snow, bright winter sun, clouds, Lake Superior, Manitoba Prairie, Northern Lights, Canada, passing.
This morning, I ache. Left shoulder, stiff neck, right hip. New constant pain, or today's simple discomforts, passing.
Your warm, sloping thighs. Our bodies just as they are. Acceptance at last. A tenderness my younger self felt only in passing.
Mist turns. Unmarked paths. Retrace steps. Much unmet searching. Our earlier years had no slowing down. What did I miss in my bypassing?
This robust red glow, well-aged in my hand, rounded and welcome. Burgundy wine, slow sips on my tongue. Evening rolls by, passing.
Trains, leisured motion, rhythmic rumbles, click-clacks, whistle-stops, sidings.
Your hand in mine, sounds of our voices. Cadence of years, passing.
Under us, wordless wheels turning, song of long passages. Not always easy, but here we are, travelers, a journey, landscapes and lifetimes, passing. Thank you. This is a great evening.
Rena, thank you so much for the way you introduced us. It's this network of people who met through Wintergreen and Rena and Lorna Crozier. Yeah, so we're here with you. You're with us. And a big thank you to Novel Idea, Nicola and Oscar, and I saw Joel, and this is a wonderful, wonderful bookstore. So I'm going to start with a poem from my first book, kind of as an intro to reading more from my recent book. So this book is A Hat to Stop a Train. This is about my relationship with my mother, who was a minister's wife, Presbyterian minister. My parents immigrated from Northern Ireland, and on coming here, my dad joined the United Church, which meant my mother joined the United Church, because basically they got two for the price of one. But she was pretty interesting, the way in which she took up that role. This is called At the Drop of a Hat. And most of the words that are spoken are her words, except when Mrs. Patterson comes in. At the drop of a hat. Would you come to the table, please? Dad and I carry in the bowls. Would you like more soup? Have you had enough? She opens the doors and ushers in the multitude. As she unpins her hat, she plans the menu, gathers up orphans, the lonely, bereaved, rustles up lunch for 15 as she arrives home from church, warms their bones. Mrs. Patterson says, this soup cures more than a cold, as her hand shakes the spoon towards her mouth. She feeds a crowd at the drop of a hat. She lifts labeled casseroles from a full freezer. Dear, would you please set out the teacups? Orange jellied salad wobbles onto a bed of iceberg lettuce. I cut carrot and celery sticks, put out pickles. It's better in here than with the crowd of adults filling the living room with questions. I drop a garnish of parsley on the pink rolled up slices of ham. Dad preaches in the living room. Right after lunch, I'll get away. She lifts the loaves, looks out into the backyard, drops of rain on the clothesline. Come and be seated, she commands. She breaks bread. Everyone eats and is filled. And I realize that's a bit like Wintergreen.
There's a lot of bread.
And for the baker. So a couple decades after that book came the book mostly about my relationship with my dad. Again, there's a cover of the parent here. And this was a harder book to write. Well, they're all hard when it comes right down to it. Altar. I set up altars everywhere I go. Polished pocket stone, daisy, or dandelion in a pinch, shell shaped like an ear, a bowl of water, comfort. I'm not religious. No, 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 no. I say no, no, no. Leave that in question or alter. And since that first book, A Hat to Stop a Train, was just the beginning of writing about clothes, and in this book it sort of really got going. A lot of references to robes and clerical gowns and so on. This is called robes. Vestments, tablecloths, Easter bonnets, baptismal gowns, Sunday best, white linen covering the blessed bread, body of Christ, not my body, his symbol, wisdom received. How does body learn to slip from mind, sever body, breath held, while our father takes the baby in his arms, lays his hand on her head, cupping holy water, fine curl of hair, shuffling parents baptized into hope, craving the eternal shield, stillness. The church's abysmal past, beyond their wakeful nights, a baby's trust. S- So the last one I'm going to read from this book is called Dominion. Dominion. The dog digs a hole in this once dominion of Canada. CBC theologian says it means stewardship. Gotta trust our national radio station, NADA. Host dominioning his interns, eyeing his interviewees. And God said, let us make man. The fowl of the air do not foul the airwaves. Sparrows chirping in the hedge don't seek dominion over the cars. Why no space for the passenger pigeon? Last one in 1914. Ivory-billed woodpecker, imperial woodpecker, gone. In our image, after our likeness. Syllables reigning over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creepeth upon it. No sermon from the silver maple, as old as the house. Roots seeking water. And let them have dominion. Mary gave birth to Jesus under a tree, not thinking of thrones, seraphims, dominations. Such celestial hierarchies can go to hell. What is our commonwealth? Influence. Who swims with the fish of the sea? Okay, I'm going to read new work. Some of you have heard me read from that book, so, you know, the new one's in progress. This is called Raspberries. I want to leave them something, balm, solace, a record, words, but at that point I'll have said enough. Even now, a lot of words uttered, thought, written. I want to compost and distill all the year's worries and wandering. The people I've known, even strangers I passed or sat across from on the bus, wondering who they are, making assumptions, stories with their overburdened conversations, the books or devices they carry. I want to carry less. Or perhaps more. Notice what I'm carrying and how. Cradle, the small white bowl I bring in from the garden, the way it holds raspberries and knows I ate half before I gave them to the bowl. Okay, this one's called, this will be my last poem. It's called Particles. I feel like my group can give me advice, maybe later. And then when we read in Picton, there'll be a little step up. Yeah. Particles. The stars made of salt, moon of cheese, earth of dust, dust bunnies in the corner the size of toads. What can we believe these days? The 70s taught me to substitute love for God, blowing in the wind. Back before we started burning the planet, we called it pollution. Before acrid forest fire scent in our nostrils, flame sweeping pines, microplastics in our lungs. Look, I believe you and in you. The oak in your heart's trunk, willow roots and branches sprouting in mine, your two good hands.
So I would like to add my thanks. I'll do it quickly because everybody's been thanked, but I'd like to thank you for being here tonight. It's just wonderful to look out and see people who obviously love poetry
or they love someone else in this room. And I also want to thank Bruce. He's always here. He records us, and that's great. And to thank the people at Novel Idea for their always hospitable approach to poetry readings and other readings. And I've been asked by the people at Writers Fest just to mention a little bit about the poetry that will be presented at Writers Fest on Friday the 19th, and I think that's their first day that isn't a student day. There are three events that have to do with poetry. At 9:30 to 11, it's a workshop poetry using form as a springboard for the imagination, and it will be taught by Sarah Sang. These are not full, but they're getting full, and you can find out more about any of them from the website, the Kingston Writers Fest website. At 12 noon to 1, Paul Vermeers will be giving a session on how to read a poem. And I'm sure in learning how to read a poem, you can also be learning how to write a poem. And then at 1:30 to 3, there will be a panel. I'm one of the panelists. The others are Paul Vermeers and Teresa Mason-Pierre. And it will be moderated by Jason Heroux, who's been our poet laureate before this, and who is pretty well recognized all over the community of poets in this town. There's other poetry things too, but you can check them out on the website of Writers Fest. And the poems I'm going to read, the first one, it really came to me that I should read something about children because they went back to school today or yesterday. Some went today because yesterday was a professional activity day for their teachers. And this is about the children that we love. And, you know, it's not without noticing that there are many places in the world where all children are not equally loved. And, I mean, we had over the weekend an incident where children were sitting on the tarmac in a plane ready to be ferried to another country unaccompanied and just released into who knew what custody. And in this poem, it does make a reference a little bit to the fact that not all children were and are as loved as we love ours. It's called Brothers Grimm. Brothers, say justice was done, and the queen a tinkle of mirror in a torrent of shards, and the apple peddler hissed to her doom in a punishing world. Say Snow White is asleep. And the page has turned on the root-ripped fissures in the path, and her branch-clawed waistcoat, skirt, and flying hair intact, and my granddaughter's cheek, a cool tulip petal against my arm. Brothers, it's dwarves she asks about. And I breathe the bedtime clean child fragrance in her hair, and Jacob, Wilhelm, say they were not children, working minds, stunted, red-eyed, noses black with soot. You dressed as little adults for your lore. I'll believe you, Brothers Grimm, for how to explain to this child, children in pitchy earth, longing for sky above black firs and sunlight sifting through forest glades. And by my side, a sweet, slight weight leans into the soul of me, and warmth seeps through my ribs. And twilight peaks our bedside rug, the ancient art of warp and weft. Let's not say that childish fingers ply the jeweled strands in age-old tribal ways. And on the footboard hangs a size 4 pale blue bunny robe
from some place where small hands learn calluses in warehouse gloom. Don't say padlocks. Close that door. Grims, she's 5 and close to sleep. Say once upon a time. Say happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And so now I am bringing you to my school days, which really are so long ago, they're like ancient history, but it's a poem remembering my sister and myself when we were in school in Kingston, Ontario, actually, but a long time ago. Hector de la Rosa and the Pedestal Sink. Understand why Hector de la Rosa, Argentinian boarder at the Jesuit prep school in town, the boy with soulful eyes and sleek tan leather shoes, cameos in this memory. His elegant ghost stands tapered toe forward beside the pedestal sink of our girlhood bedroom, its gleaming porcelain bowl accessed avidly and often by 2 vain girls for beauty rituals performed with angst and aspiration. Jowl idle at the sink. No clatter through lipsticks. Sizzle, sirene, sweet baby pink. No posing. Coy shoulder. Tilt of chin. No vamp, coquette, girl next door. No, she eases our ivory comb through her wavy hair. In the mirror she gazes off to the left, reflecting the rose-sprigged wallpaper. Hector de la Rosa, she breathes. Oh, for God's sake, move, I say, and she does, without the bunt of hip or poke of elbow, and drifts to the middle of our polished plank floor in her white slip, swaying a bit, eyes closed. His shoes, she whispers. Me, I take the sink, confront the mirror, turn on the faucet full, and tick through the pedestrian shoes of our local boys. Canvas keds, black and white high tops, loafers, Oxfords, labels from the showroom of Agnew Surpass Shoes, where Jal and I work weekend shifts for spending money. The mirror doesn't show me much, our rose-sprigged room, my slightly righteous face. I didn't see the wash of love, rinsing the random moment which will not be lived again. And Jal, her sweet and silly smile. I yank my hair into an elastic band. I wash my face with serious soap, the kind used for a date with Donald Stanley, my hometown boy with the brown suede hush puppies. And now, so I have introduced my sister, and we lost my sister. She was only a year and a little bit older than myself, and I missed her terribly, miss her terribly still. And it was in that period that I went to a workshop at Wintergreen. Susan was there. Sheila wasn't, but she's been there at other ones. And started writing poetry. So this one is, my sister was a musician and she was a member of the Cantabile Choir. So if you're a Kingstonian, you know of that choir. She was a founding member. And this is called, My Sister's Choir Sings Frozen in Frobisher Bay. And Frozen in Frobisher Bay is a very heartfelt song. It's about a whaler, so it's tragic for the whalers, it's tragic for the whales, it's winter, they're trapped. It's very, very tragic song. My sister's choir sings Frozen in Frobisher Bay. The conductor, his tuxedoed torso truncated at tie and tail by the orchestra's blade of light, stops his raised baton. The man beside me on the dusky balcony is silent. They are all silent, all around me, while the women stand on the tiers, their faces lush with sorrow, wrapped in the loneliness of the song. Where my sister stood last year, another woman stands, her eyelashes curves of shadow, downcast.